Welcome to the first Salivary Gland Cancer UK podcast. Developed from discussion at one of our regular gatherings in 2020, it's dedicated to the important topic of scans for patients after being diagnosed and treated for adenoid cystic carcinoma. At our gatherings, patients, carers and clinicians come together to share knowledge and experience. We work together to provide reliable information, push forward more research and better outcomes for those affected by rare salivary gland cancers, such as adenoid cystic carcinoma. In this podcast, Dr. Metcalf addresses questions from the group by discussing some of the considerations when having a scan, including individual risk factors, individual preferences and patient anxiety levels around these scans. He introduces and talks through the concept of nomograms and clarifies which type of scan is most appropriate for which part of the body.
I would start by saying there's no kind of black and white guidance on if you've had a diagnosis of ACC, this is what must happen. And I think the discussion I'm going to have is more about just general principles of oncology. And what we're going to talk about is relevant to ACC as much as it's relevant to any other cancer, any common cancer. And I suppose the main difference though with ACC and most common cancers is if you've had, say, colorectal cancer, there are established guidelines. So it removes all this element of discussion about worry, you know, people worrying that you're going to worry about, you know, the next scan and things like this. So in principle, the considerations you'd have when you're thinking about doing a scan after someone's had a resection of a tumor or had chemoradiotherapy or essentially treatment and you want to eradicate all the disease, the purpose of the scan is to say, well, is there still evidence that you've controlled the disease? Is there any evidence that the disease has come back? I mean, that's the main question that you're asking. My perspective is I would look, so there are these things called nomograms, and I think I know a couple of people here, we've kind of talked through this information about nomograms, and there was a group in the US about 5 years ago looked at several hundred patients with ACC, and they looked at all these different characteristics that people have mentioned about their tumors, like the size or the T stage, perineural invasion, things like this, and you can use this tool to predict the risk of recurrence, either local or local regional recurrence or distant recurrence at 10 years. And it's the best tool we've got. It's not ideal because it's only a few hundred patients have gone into, you know, to developing this, but it's the best tool we've got that you can then say to an individual, well, based on the features of your tumor, we think the risk of recurrence at 10 years is X percent. And so some patients will have a very small primary tumor with no risk factors, you know, a 10 millimeter tumor with no concerns on the pathology, completely resected. And they might have a, you know, 5% or less risk of recurrence at 10 years. And other patients might have a really high risk tumor, a very large tumor with different pathology risk factors. And that patient might have a 50, 60, 70% risk of recurrence at 10 years. And so if you look at these two different situations, you know, one patient you're probably going to want to scan more often than another, because if someone's got a 5% risk of recurrence at 10 years, it means that, you know, 95% chance that all the scans you do are going to pick up nothing. And then there are sort of concerns that you would have around scans. So Shane, I mean, the oncologist or surgeon said to you that their concern was about kind of you and your, you know, I guess creating anxiety or worry about the scan. And that, you know, that is a concern. It is a legitimate concern because lots of patients do get worried about scans and end up sort of almost getting too focused on them. But the main concern is probably about radiation exposure. So if you're going to do CT scans, particularly on a young person, every 3 months for 10 years, you know, that's 40 CT scans. And the general rule with radiation is there is no safe dose of radiation. You know, even a simple X-ray is isn't safe. It's not entirely safe. And a CT is the amount of radiation of, you know, even several hundred x-rays. And so 40 CTs is like thousands of x-rays. So there is a trade-off with CT imaging around radiation safety. So these are the kind of considerations that you would have. And then, I mean, my approach would be you want to have an individual discussion with each patient and talk about what is the risk of recurrence. Is that risk predominantly in the first 1, 2, 3 years, or actually is that risk ongoing? And another thing we know about ACC is the risk isn't really predominantly in the first 1, 2, or 3 years. It's actually, you know, a 10-year risk or even longer. There are patients out there, I know people may know patients who've had a resection and then had a recurrence over 10 years later. And so the question about doing scans is also, if I'm going to start doing them every few months, are you going to do that for 10 years plus? Follow on point really that I wasn't clear about, because I talked about radiation, but obviously MRI scans don't involve radiation. So all of this, the concern about risk of radiation exposure only applies to CT scans and PET CT scans. Mm-hmm. It doesn't apply to MR scans, which, you know, it's just a big magnet that you sort of lie inside. So then the risk, the concern is more just about, well, what are we going to find? What are we going to do with it? Will that cause anxiety? Will we know how to interpret it? But so the radiation question doesn't apply to MR scans. So MR is better for brain, head and neck than CT, brain and neck. MR is better for the liver than CT of the liver. MR isn't good for the lungs or the sort of rest of the abdomen. But CT has the advantage that you can image MR, head, neck, chest, abdomen, pelvis in one assessment. So it's, you know, so that's why often people go for CTs, and people often then do an MR to follow up kind of indeterminate, you know, findings that you're unsure of on a CT. You might then say, oh, well, we're not sure. So like we were talking earlier about liver lesions that people are saying, oh, are they cysts or are they secondary deposits? And it's a really common question because liver cysts, for instance, are really common. And then, so a CT might pick up something like that, and then you would do an MR to follow up. So that's the context. So the question, how often should I have a scan? There's no one answer then.
Dr. Metcalf then continued with some further detail around the different types of scans and where they work best for patients, including the use of PET CT and its limitations with adenoid cystic carcinoma.
So we've said about CT. CT is probably considered the go-to assessment for, you know, post-operative scans or for scans if there's known to be recurrence. And the main thing about CT in terms of its risk is radiation. MR scans are different CT because of they use kind of, well, they're called magnetic resonance. I mean, essentially, if anyone's, I'm sure you've all had an MR, or most people probably had an MR scan, you're lying in a massive magnet, basically, that when it makes that loud noise is polarized, you know, it's putting you in a very strong magnetic field, which is why you can't have any metal in the room, because it kind of flies, things will fly around the room. And it essentially polarizes all the cells in your body. And then when you let them go back to where they were before, you can sort of use computers to pull apart the difference in the signal from different parts of your body, and it tells you, you know, gives you a much more detailed picture because of how it works rather than just being x-rays. So MR in broad terms gives you more clear resolution, so better differentiation between different tissue structures than CT. But MR can't cope with things that move. So MR is definitely good for head and neck, and it's definitely good for liver. But the reason you don't do an MR of the lungs, for instance, is because when you breathe, you can't hold your breath for long enough to get all those MR images. So it would just be a big smudge. And the same reason, if you're looking at the abdomen, all your bowels keep moving. But then MR is actually very good for looking at limbs. So occasionally people have unusual lumps and bumps on the thigh or you know, the knee or whatever, and again MR is actually really good at looking at the tissues in your limbs as well. And so that I would see CT and MR as complementary to each other, really. PET CT, just for those that aren't that familiar with it, I mean, essentially, it's got two elements. It's a CT scan, which, depending on where you have the PET CT, is normally the same as a diagnostic as a normal CT that you would have. But the PET bit, essentially, when you go for a PET scan, you get an injection before, and what they inject into you is glucose that emits some signal that can be picked up by the scanner. And so PET CT it's exploiting the fact that tumors use more glucose than the rest of your body. So they have a high metabolism. They require, you know, that they just burn through glucose. And so they take up the glucose, and that's why they glow. And so that's why, in a broad sense, PET CTs are better than CTs, because you see lumps like the CT shows you, but you see them glow as well. So something that might be a bit of a lump and you're not really sure, and the radiologist just might move over it even, if that lump glows on the scan, you can be more confident that it's related to the cancer, because your normal tissues wouldn't glow. I suppose the other caveat to that, though, is anything that's inflamed will glow. So an inflammatory nodule. So if you've got a lung infection, that will glow on a PET scan, or anything that's infected. So infection, inflammation glows as well. But not all ACC tumours burn through glucose. So there are some tumours like lymphomas, which uniformly have high glucose uptake and are positive on PET scans if it's there. Some ACC tumours, probably, you know, most ACC tumours do take up glucose and would be hot on the PET scan, but some don't. And so it's not as good in ACC as it is in other tumour types. And that's the thing to think about with PET scans. So if you've had a positive PET scan in the past, then you know that your tumour takes up glucose because it's taken it up in the past. And so then if you subsequently have resection and then have negative PET scans, I think you could be very confident that that means it's negative. But if you've never had a positive PET scan before, and you've only had CT scans and MR scans, and then you have negative PET scans, I think you have to take it with a pinch of salt that it might be what you call a false negative. That being said, a PET CT is a CT as well. So you're going to see something that's a lump, as you would see on a CT. So so that's PET scans. They potentially bring something else to the, you know, to the table, so to speak, but not quite as, you can't be quite as confident in ACC as you can in lots of other cancer types about your PET result. So, you know, normally we wouldn't even mention chest x-rays. They're so, you know, kind of really old school investigation, but chest x-rays are something that's worth thinking about, because particularly in the setting of curative intent treatment, so surgery and or radiotherapy, chemoradiotherapy, and then someone is on follow-up, a chest x-ray has very little radiation compared with a CT scan, but is a good way of looking at the lungs. And one thing we know about ACC is that in terms of patterns of recurrence, lung recurrence is more frequent than recurrence to other sites of the body. So a chest x-ray that is, you know, that's done after an operation is, you know, I would again say it's complementary to other forms of other scans, and particularly with the purpose of decreasing the frequency of doing CT scans. But the caveat to chest x-rays is their sensitivity is very low. So again, they can miss things. So, you know, people today have talked about having lung nodules measuring a few millimeters in size. It's very difficult to see lung nodules that are at 5 millimeters in size on a chest x-ray. But if something is a centimeter, you can quite, you know, you would expect to see that on a chest x-ray, for instance. So as a screening assessment, following curative intent treatment, specifically with the aim of pushing your CT scans further apart as well, I think chest x-rays are really valuable. I think probably lots of patients will have had had chest x-rays performed. And then the other scan that we use is ultrasound, and ultrasound has a less, you know, it doesn't have a routine role. But for instance, if someone has a lymph node in their neck, say, that you can feel, then ultrasound is really good to say whether it looks benign or malignant, because we all get enlarged lymph nodes in our neck if we get a sore throat, for instance. So you can get, and that's called, people call it reactive lymph nodes, which means reacting to an infection. But an ultrasound will tell you whether it, the shape of, the way it's shaped, you can actually see on an ultrasound, and also it tells you about the center of the lymph node and how it looks. So ultrasounds themselves can actually, they can say this looks malignant versus this looks benign. And also, if you're having an ultrasound of your neck, say, and the radiologist is there holding a probe on your neck, it's, they can at the same time do a fine needle aspiration, which is, you know, or a biopsy of the lymph node, and you can sort of get a definitive answer from that.
You're listening to St Ivory Glen Cancer UK's podcast, where Dr Metcalf discusses scans at one of our regular patient, carer and clinician gatherings. Moving on, the discussion turned to the use of contrast in scans.
So contrast is, so it's almost like, it's slightly akin to the glucose thing in a PET scan. So you can have a CT with contrast or without contrast. You can have an MR with contrast or without contrast. Ideally, you'd have them with contrast, and almost everyone, 95% are with contrast. The reason you might have them without is if someone has an allergy to contrast, or if for whatever reason someone's got no really bad veins, because obviously you have to put a cannula, a drip in to put the contrast into. So, but most of the time it's done as routine with contrast. And what the contrast brings is you take pre and post contrast sort of images, and tumor lumps that are related to a cancer versus lumps that are related to, you know, an infection or something else will have different, they will look different after the contrast. So they, the word is they enhance, they have this post contrast enhancement. But that's, I mean, I would say it's standard actually for people to have contrast. The other reason people don't have contrast is if they've got kidney trouble, because the contrast is bad for your kidneys. Or if you've got diabetes and complications of diabetes, you know, that's another reason you might not. But 95%, ideally everyone would have contrast. And I don't think people would normally get involved. You know, it wouldn't be something that would normally be discussed with you unless you'd had a reaction to it in the past or something.
Dr. Metcalf has asked if adenoid cystic carcinoma growing along nerves can be seen on our scans. As we know, ACC is unusual in that it grows along our nerves. Can that be seen on the scan?
So ACC, both on a microscopic level and on a sort of physical lump level, likes being around nerves. So when you look under the microscope, you can see it around the nerves often in the tumour itself. And also when you do scans, you can actually see it around the nerves that you can physically see. Okay, so it does like that kind of nerve environment. So you can see involvement of the nerves as a site of recurrence on a CT or an MR. Again, an MR is better in the head and neck region.
Picking up. I only have MRIs.
Yeah, so that is better at picking up this perineural, is the word, involvement. However, if there's a lump, you would expect to see it on an MR or a CT. And if that lump is in the, you know, next to the nerve, then you would expect to see it. But sometimes it's not a lump. And what it probably is if this is the nerve here, the tumor cells are in the nerve sheath around the nerve. And so you then get this enhancement. And we talked earlier about the contrast. So what happens is it doesn't look any different in its shape, but it lights up on an MR scan. Sometimes, though, I suppose you could get microscopic involvement of a nerve. So cell, you know, smallish numbers relatively of cells around a nerve that are sufficient to cause some problem with the function of the nerve. So you get symptoms like nerve type symptoms, but not sufficient to actually light up a scan. Yeah. And so you know, all of these things are possible, really. And so the disease can be, to directly answer your question, you said sort of, does it have to be a certain size? The disease could be too small to see on an MR.
Yeah.
But this is why what's important is the conversation you're having with your oncologist or surgeon, because if a patient tells you, but I've got nerve pain that's getting worse, then that sounds like an important symptom to then follow up. And if you've got nerve pain that's getting worse, but you've had a previous MR that's negative, you'd have quite a low threshold for doing early follow-up MR scans to keep reevaluating it, as well as trying to treat the symptoms.
Lastly, some finishing words around individual circumstances, balancing risk and scans when patients have local or distant recurrence of disease. The role of surveillance and the importance of comparison is also discussed.
A lot of the discussion we had at the start was about the difficulties, really, when someone has had a curative intent treatment and then further down the line, you're then trying to look for recurrence, and all these questions about anxiety and radiation, things like this. But if someone has got residual disease or recurrent disease, I think you would be you've got a far lower threshold for doing scans of any sort. And so a lot of the, you know, the question, for instance, about radiation exposure, really, that's about your risk of, it's about your 20-year risk of second cancers. I mean, that's it's not just the radiation itself that's the worry, it's the fact that radiation may cause some other cancer. So, but this sort of trade-off that we're always kind of, you know, it's a balancing act, isn't it? If there is known to be recurrent or distant, local or distant recurrence, suddenly the cancer is far more risk than any worry about radiation exposure and the 20-year risk. So then you're much more, as I say, you have a much lower threshold for doing any sorts of scans, really. So on the first scan, if you've got one chance scan that shows recurrence, and then you've got one follow-up scan, you would just compare with that scan, because they will have already compared with previous and they'd have said, it wasn't there, now it's there. So the first time, you're just saying compare with this. But there are patients who have been having scans every, 6 months, 3 months, for years. And you might get a report that compares it to the previous scan. And then the next one compares it to that one, and the next one to that one. And so the answer is always minimal change, overall broadly stable. Then you might look back over 3 years, 5 years, and actually you might see significant change. And that's relevant in two contexts, really. One is the context of surveillance. So, you know, you can keep being told stable, 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 but actually the bigger picture is there is real growth, albeit slow growth. So people who are having surveillance when they're known to have recurrence, but they're just carrying on, you know, with their lives. And also on drug therapy, and it makes, I mean, we could talk for this is a whole discussion in itself, really, and we don't have time to go into it in too much detail, but just to touch on this concept, an ACC is very different from almost every other, from 99% of other cancers in this slow growth in, you know, that's shown by some patients, because they might have very slow growth and then eventually it becomes symptomatic, so they start a particular drug treatment, whatever the drug treatment is, and then you keep seeing it's stable, it's stable, it's stable. So you carry on. But then over 18 months, 12 or 18 months, you look back and you see actually the trajectory may be the same trajectory. So it's a really good point, and it's really important to look back at previous scans. And radiologists often say on the report, they'll say comparison with scan of this date. And sometimes they do just say compare with that one. Sometimes they'll say scan compare with this, 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 this. And the onus on us as clinicians, I suppose, is to look at the report and see when they've compared it to it. And if need be, either look at the pictures ourselves, because some things are really easy for us to measure, or we have to push them for a sort of different, you know, a follow-on report, which you can get. And any radiologist, it's very reasonable for us to ask radiologists to compare over a longer period.
You've been listening to Dr. Metcalf of Saliva Gland Cancer UK discussing the role of scans for patients with adenoid cystic carcinoma at one of our 2020 gatherings. Join our network to keep updated on future events, releases, and developments as we move into 2021.